Good morning, everyone. As you know, we've been having a March Gladness Month, and they spell my name right. That's great. You know, they always do. I'm kidding. But anyway, so this whole month we've been trying to break our 400 barrier, and we've been able to do that for the past 4 weeks, and today we had 435. So let's give the Lord a hand there. Now, I've been here at this church for some time now, and I want to tell you what Sunday school means to me. And of course, you can tell by looking at me, everything has some sort of food connotation to it. Well, to me, Sunday school is like having a wedge salad with blue cheese, crumbles, and good old bacon bits, you know, before a big steak. And I enjoy a salad and I enjoy a steak and all, but to me, Sunday school is just getting you ready for the steak. And if you haven't tried Sunday school in a while, and most of you may come already, but if you don't, or if you haven't been, why don't you try it and see? We have age groups for all people, from children all the way up to whatever age we are today. And I happen to teach, I don't really teach them anything because they know as much or more than I do, but we have discussions in my class. I'm 65 and up, but we have classes all over this campus, and as a Baptist church, you're welcome to go anywhere that you're comfortable. So, you know, don't feel like you're limited on where you can go and what you can do, but if you just come, we'll find you a place that you like. And so give it a try and see. But congratulations on this month, and this may be only a starting point for us, and we'll get the ball rolling, and we'll keep it rolling, and we'll grow our Sunday school, not just for the numbers of it all, but so that people will be here on campus hearing about God and about the things of God, so that we learn more and we become closer to Him. Thank you.
All right, thank you, Gene. Enjoying this hope today? Let's give him a round of applause. Thank you for being here. I just like to describe the hope, this hope as the real deal. God's just gifted them. They're so talented, but they're very, very humble guys. And I appreciate it. And I thank you for coming and staying all day in Silver Creek. You've all been coming here for what? Off and on for over 12 to 14 years. So that's outstanding. Today I want to talk to you about a subject that's just on our minds so much today as we see road rage, we see domestic shootings and violence. I want to talk about anger when it's too hot to handle. And I want you to turn to two texts today, Matthew chapter 5, verse 21 through 26. And then we're going to look at Ephesians 4, 26 and 27. Matthew chapter 5, beginning with verse 21. And you have heard that it was said to the people long ago, you shall not murder, and anyone who murders will be subject to judgment. But I tell you that anyone who is angry with a brother or sister will be subject to judgment. Again, anyone who says to a brother or sister, Raca, is answerable to the court, and anyone who says, you fool, shall be in danger of hell fire. Therefore, if you're offering your gift at the altar, and there remember that your brother or sister has something against you, leave your gift there in front of the altar. First go and be reconciled to them, and then come and offer your gift. Settle matters quickly with your adversary who is taking you to court. Do it while you're still together on the way, or your adversary may hand you over to the judge, and the judge may hand you over to the officer, and you may be thrown into prison. Truly, I tell you, you will not get out until you have paid the last penny. Now turn to Ephesians chapter 4, beginning with verse 26. In your anger, do not sin. Do not let the sun go down while you're still angry. And do not give the devil a foothold. Most of you have heard of the Hall of Fame New York Yankee, Mickey Mantle. One day, Mickey Mantle got in touch with another friend of his who was a former Yankees manager, Billy Martin. And he said, I want to take you deer hunting to one of my friend's plantations. So they got up really early one morning, and they drove to the friend's plantation. Mickey looked at Billy and said, you stay in the car. I need to go knock on the door of my friend, just speak to him, and we can go hunt all over this place. So Mickey got out, knocked on the door of his friend. His friend answered, said, "Mickey, it's just so great to see you." Mickey said, "Billy Martin, I've come to hunt on your place." He said, "You can hunt anywhere you want to on my plantation, but," said, "I got a problem I need you to help me with." Mickey said, "What's that?" He said, "I got a pet mule out there in the barn. He's going blind and he's sick. And the vet told me I need to shoot him." He said, "I just can't bring myself to shoot him." He said, "I'll let you hunt if you'll just shoot my mule." And so Mickey said, "I'll shoot your mule. That's not a problem." So he started thinking. If you remember, Billy Martin had a little bit of a temper. And he started thinking, "I'm going to pull a trick on Billy Martin." So when Mickey went outside the friend's house, he slammed the door and stormed out, got in the car, and Billy said, "What in the world's wrong with you, Mickey?" He said, "My friend won't let us hunt on his place." I said, "You're kidding." He said, "Heck, I think I'm going to kill his mule. Let's go to the barn." So they went out to the barn, and Billy said, "He's got to let us hunt here, but you can't kill the man's mule." He said, "I'm going to do it." So they drove over to the barn. Mickey got out with his rifle, took aim at the mule, pow! And he looked at Billy Martin when he did it, and Billy's rifle was smoking. He said, "Billy, what'd you do?" He said, "I took out a couple of cows while you were killing that mule." I'll get emails from PETA this week, but I'm just reading the story to you. Can you associate with that kind of anger? You go over to Proverbs 22, 24, and Ecclesiastes 7, 9. "Do not associate with a man given to anger. I go with a hot-tempered man. Do not be angry in your heart to be angry, for anger resides in the bosom of fools." Ben Franklin said, "Anger is never without a reason, but usually it does not have a good reason." Anger is something we all battle. If not held in check, it will absolutely consume us. When we think about anger, we like to look at ourselves as Christians, as people who are just showing forth a spirit-filled life, and love, joy, peace, long-suffering, patience just exudes from us. But oftentimes, we get angry, and it's the sinful kind. We deny it. Sometimes we try to disguise it. We can say we're not angry, but those who know us best know we're lying. One of the most helpful strategies for dealing with anger is what we call in psychology anger management. Here's a sample of anger management. Angry people tend to curse, swear, speak highly colorful words. When you're angry, you think you can get very exaggerated. Try replacing that with more rational words. Instead of telling yourself, "Oh, it's awful. It's terrible. Everything's ruined." Tell yourself it's frustrating. It's understandable that I'm upset about it, but it's not the end of the world, and getting angry is not going to fix anything anyhow. Doesn't that sound cozy? I want you to know Jesus wants to take this thing a little bit deeper, because he says it's an issue of the heart. Notice first of all here an overview of anger. In chapter 5 of Matthew, look back at verse 20, Jesus said, "Our righteousness must exceed that of the scribes and the Pharisees." Jesus could have tackled any subject that he wanted to, but he begins the body of the sermon by dealing with anger. Look at verse 21. He says, "You've heard that the ancients, the Israelites, were told, 'You shall not commit murder, but whosoever commits murder shall be liable to the court.'" The opening phrase says, "You have heard." What he's doing, he's going all the way back to the Old Testament. In fact, he goes to Exodus, to the Ten Commandments. In Exodus chapter 20, verse 13, "You shall not commit murder." Well, religious leaders are sitting there listening to all this and saying, "Listen, I've never committed murder." He's talking about this. "I've never committed that crime." And then he drops what we call a preaching bomb. He says that in verse 22, "But I say to you, whoever is angry with his brother, you're guilty before the court." Listen, he says, "Whoever says you fool, shall be guilty enough to go into a fiery hell. In doing so, he moves from the fruit of murder to the root of murder. It's anger. It's in the heart. When he's talking about the court here, where you got the courts here in our society, but you got the Supreme Court at the throne of Almighty God. Have you ever been angry with anybody in your thoughts and in your attitude? Well, if you call them a fool, you're guilty enough to enter a fiery hell. Now notice the phrase, good for nothing, the Aramaic raka. I was reading some commentaries on what raka means. One of them says, you brainless blockhead. Here's another one. You worthless son of a motherless goat. I'd never seen that one before. I think that was Episcopalian. And then the other one is, you idiot. And then you empty-headed fool. We look at that word fool, that's the Greek word moros. That's where we get the word moron. It's used to describe a person's mental ability, but it also, back in biblical times, talked about a person's moral character. See, some people didn't have much, but they did have their moral character. And then when you discredited them and took that away from them, that was a very serious matter. But notice it's interesting that Jesus includes in his sermon, he says, with his brother. But I say to you that everyone who is angry with his brother, isn't it true that our anger tends to flare up often against the people who know us best? Jesus primarily is concerned with our relationships, those our brothers and sisters in Christ. How do we treat our spouse? How do we treat our children? What kind of respect do we show for our moms and our dads, our employers, our co-workers? Colossians chapter 3:19, Paul writes, husbands, love your wives and do not be embittered against them. Are you always trying to make your wife feel guilty? Are you always fault-finding? Are you a person who's name-calling in your marriage? Peter says that if we don't treat our spouses with love, he says in 1 Peter 3:7, your prayers will be hindered. Ephesians 6:4, Paul says, fathers, do not provoke your children, but bring them up in the discipline and the instruction of the Lord. Our children need to be shown love. They need to be shown compassion. Discipline, yes. Anger, no. 1 Timothy 2:8, therefore I want the men in every place to pray, lifting up holy hands without wrath and without dissension. He's connecting all this with worship. He says we got to control our attitudes, our hearts. They've got to be controlled by the Holy Spirit and the Word of God, so that in these relationships that we have good communication, we have good relationships that affects our prayers and our worship with the Lord. Bill and Gloria Gaither really changed styles of worship in the late 60s all the way up to about 2000. They were married in 1962 and they hit the road with their family with their music in 1967. Oftentimes they're asked this question, how in the world did y'all travel together all the time in such close quarters? How in the world did you do that and also have conflicts and get them resolved? And here's what they said. They said, you know, we were in close quarters. It was hard to be good-natured in front of the band members and the other singers that we were in front of all the time. But they said, I want you to know we argued not nearly enough. Now that's strange, isn't it? We argued not nearly enough. And that answer serves as a reminder that healthy relationships have to devote necessary time to address inevitable conflicts. So does that mean that every expression of anger is sin? No. Jesus and Paul both call people fools. There's a lady that came and sat back over here a couple times several years ago with her boyfriend. She sent me an email. Now, an email, when you're complaining against somebody, is the document of a coward. And I think my size intimidates my critics. But she sent me an email and said, I've been to hear you preach twice, and all you preach is hate. All you preach is anger. I will never come back to hear you again. You don't act like Jesus. And I tried to be nice. And I had my secretary to send back a cowardly document. I wrote it on a piece of notebook paper. And I gave it to her, and I sent back whatever her name was, which I've totally forgotten. And I sent back, and I said, ma'am, undoubtedly, you've never read the New Testament. I said, if you knew about the life of Jesus, he was angry on many occasions. If you'll look up where he went in on the money changers there in John chapter 2, and he cleared the temple. He was angry with those who assailed him for healing on the Sabbath in Mark 3, 5. His anger was not a personal attack. When Jesus got angry, it was because of injustice and sin. Jesus exercised a righteous anger. Ephesians 4:26. Ladies and gentlemen, we ought to be excited that the Georgia House and the Senate passed the heartbeat amendment. Ladies and gentlemen, we know that's going to be contested. The pro-choice people already have their liberal judge, their federal judge on the bench, who's going to rule it unconstitutional, and it's going to keep going through all the channels until it gets to the Supreme Court. And if Ruth Bader Ginsburg is on life support, she will still vote against this bill with one finger. Some of you don't know who that is. Listen to me carefully. We need to be angry with the abortionist. That's all about money. We need to be angry with the drug peddlers and pushers in our town. We need to be angry about the alcohol industry. Because, ladies and gentlemen, that is the number one drug problem in our nation. And as a Christian, I just choose to stand against it. We need to be angry about injustice. We need to be angry about sin. Jesus exercised righteous anger. And when others pervert and destroy God's purposes, we ought to have a sense of righteous indignation. Now let's look at overcoming anger here. First of all, when we find ourselves in anger, and I'm talking about inappropriate anger, first thing we need to do is just admit it. I was over by Chick-fil-A last week, and there's that little four-way stop sign right in the middle of the plaza. I was coming from Chick-fil-A, going to another godly place called Gofferless, and I pulled up there first, and then three cars pulled up at the intersection right there. So it was my turn to go first. So I pulled out, and a lady in the SUV to my right, boom! She didn't even get on her brakes good before she was in the end. I slammed on the brakes, and I went, righteous indignation. You know what? She went, boom, and went right on. Well, thing you need to do, the first thing you need to do is just confess it. Ask God to change you from inside out. Be patient as God works within you. When you confess your anger, also be aware of the consequences of angry outbursts. Guys, ladies, if you're married, this is forbidden in your marriage. I want a divorce. Always threatening to get a divorce. Guys, don't ever say you're fat. Don't ever say that. I'm trying to help you out here. The other thing is, don't ever say, I hate you. Don't ever say your spouse, you're stupid. Well, you married her. If she's stupid, what are you? Don't ever say you're ugly. Don't ever say that. Your spouse is created by God. And in your eyes, your spouse ought to be the most beautiful person on planet Earth. If you have something good to say, put it in writing. It's just not a bad idea. If you have something bad to say, don't ever put it in writing. And then just don't go to people and say, listen, I've just got this prayer concern for you. And all it is just gossip and slander under the guise of prayer. I was reading about the British physician John Hunter in the 18th century. He was the personal surgeon of King George III. Suffered from angina, pains in his chest. And especially when he got in an argumentative situation, he experienced even more pain. One day he was in a board meeting. He got angry with one of the guys. He walked out and dropped dead in the next room. Psalm 52:2, David states that our tongues devise destruction and can be likened to a sharp razor. Because when a razor is too sharp, it can cut the owner. And our words also can slice and dice people. Prepare to have your buttons pushed. Those who know you best and love you most, they know exactly how to get under your skin and make you explode. Another thing I want to tell you is, watch your hand gestures. Early on when I was attempting to learn how to preach, Delaine said, she's my number one fan and number one critic. But she said, you've got to stop moving your hands so much. You look like a hovering helicopter every time you preach. But you know, sometimes when you're mad at somebody and you're angry, you might be better off just to keep your hands in your pockets. Be careful about your voice inflection, how you say what you say. Remember, Delaine last week said something to me, and I went back to my premarital counseling. Now, don't ever use the word you when you feel like you're being attacked. Don't do that. You know, if you look at somebody and say, you're about the sorriest piece of humanity I've ever seen, they're going to defend their honor even though they might not have any. But I said, now, darling, I said, let me just share something. I understand what's been told to me. And it doesn't have to be told to me over and over. I get it. Have y'all heard you yet? I hadn't. And I had to strain to get all that done. But you know what? There was no argument at all. There was a slight little conflict there. But I put the spotlight on myself. I know I'm the one that has the problem, that I'm dysfunctional. I know that. Something about right or happy. I know all that. And so I just accepted it. And there's no expression of anger. I love to hear Chuck Swindoll preach. I don't think he's ever written one of his sermons. I think his research assistants do it. But they do a great job. He said he had his little grandson. And he took his grandson to a shopping center. Just a little fella. And he said, I was driving a compact car and pulled in one of those compact car places. There's just enough room. And he said, my little grandson opened his door and sort of silkwormed out of the seat. Said he didn't even touch the car next to him. He said, when I opened the door, he said, I touched the car next to me and there was a man in it. And he said, I got on out and I looked and I didn't do any damage. I just barely touched it. And said, he was a big man. A man came around the corner and he said, I looked at him, he smiled and said, there's no damage. And he said, the man never smiled. So he said, I closed the door, walked by the man, and took my little grandson by the hand and walked away. And he said, I felt like I needed to turn back around. And he said, when I turned around, the man opened his own back door to his car and slammed it against the fender of Chuck Swindoll's car. Chuck said, I let go of my grandson's hand and thought, I can see the headline, Pastor Decapitates Man in parking lot. He said, I started to take a step towards the man. The man was mad, and he said, I got thinking the worst headline would be Pastor Beheaded in parking lot. And so he said, we just sort of stared at each other down a little bit. And he said, and I thought, boy, foul everything up if I got smeared out here in this parking lot, if I started fighting with that man. So he said, I did something. He said, I applied patience, a very rare virtue. And he said, I just walked on into the store, away from that guy. I walked away from man's natural tendency towards revenge. And I'm going to tell you something. I don't know how that little grandson was, but he will always, always, always remember that scene and what his granddad didn't do. The other thing I want you to write down is this. Confront your anger. Reconcile with those with whom you're angry. Now, Jesus gave us two illustrations exposing the seriousness of anger. First is in a worship context in verse 23 and 24. And the second is in a worship context down in a legal setting down in verse 25 and 26. Notice Jesus changes from everyone to you to ensure that every disciple applies what he says directly to himself or herself. In his first illustration, he says, therefore, if you're presenting an offering at the altar, and there remember that your brother has something against you, leave your offering there before the altar and go first to be reconciled to your brother, and then come and present your offering. I've always thought about that in 21st and 20th century terms. The plate's passed. I give my offering. I need to leave and be reconciled with somebody. But suppose they're in Jerusalem at this time, as they were. Back in those days, they were still offering sacrifices on the altar. So if the person is in Jerusalem, they probably brought their animal sacrifice. It was to be reported there for the sacrifice. And perhaps they had something against somebody in Galilee. They had to travel about a week by foot to go back and be reconciled before they could come back and worship. The thought is the person leaves that animal on the altar and then makes that week-long trip to reconcile with his brother. And notice that Jesus makes an important distinction in this verse. He says, if your brother or sister has something against you, the phrase something against you probably means a just claim. Somebody's got a beef with you that is legitimate. And he says, settle the issue before God. Proverbs 19:11. A man's discretion makes him slow to anger, and it is his glory to overlook a transgression. If another has done something seriously, something that's sinful that causes harm to you others, Matthew 18:15-17 tells us how to approach that person. And in this context, Jesus said that some believers should not attend church until they have pursued reconciliation. Leonardo da Vinci was painting The Last Supper. It took a long, long time. As he began painting the face of Jesus, he left one day and he had a horrible argument with a friend. I mean, his temper got out of hand. Said he came back to that masterpiece and began to try to paint the face of Jesus. He said, I couldn't even apply paint. My talents and gifts were just frozen. He said, I dropped the brush, went to that person, was reconciled. The person forgave me. And I came back and he said, the paint just flowed as I finished up the face of Jesus. What cataracts do to our eyes, anger does to the soul. Last thing I want to share with you is correct it immediately. Second illustration, notice here, it's a sense of urgency. Verse 25 and 26, he's talking about somebody who's taking you to court. Make friends quickly with your opponents at law while you are with him on the way, so that your opponent may not hand you over to the judge and the judge to the officer, and then you're thrown into prison. Truly I say to you, you will not come out of there until you paid up the last cent. This sounds like they're going to small claims court. It's just your benefit to settle this. If you really owe what the person says you owe, settle that out of court before you're thrown into prison. Reconcile with your enemies. Don't wait till it's too late. It'll hurt you and it'll hurt the one that's angry. a root of bitterness can sprout and overtake you and your opponent. And notice, you say, now I've tried to reconcile with my opponent. I've tried to reconcile with somebody I've been angry with, or they've been angry with me, and they just refuse to reconcile. Well, let me give you some good news. Romans chapter 12, verse 18 says, if possible, so far as it depends on you, be at peace with all men. If you attempt in a godly way to reconcile with somebody and they reject it, you're good. It's like a pardon. A pardon is not a pardon unless it's accepted by the person who's being excused. Sometimes you just can't reconcile with people because their hearts are so hard, they want to hang on to their anger and their bitterness. They just refuse. God releases us from that. Have you done what you could do to be at peace with your antagonists? Your in-laws, your children, your spouse, your ex, your co-worker, your friend, your neighbor. I remember we moved into seminary in our second housing section. We lived upstairs. Everybody had an assigned parking place. I was so spiritual when I was in seminary. Mark and Lee Lynette moved downstairs. Boy, the first thing they did was park in my parking space. I went down and put a note on their door. I hadn't even met them yet. I said, we have assigned parking places. Stay out of mine. That'll make good neighbors, won't it? When there's a tornado, don't go down there and try to get in that first floor apartment with them, because they ain't going to let you in. But you know what? I apologize for that later. And we've been lifelong friends. Some of the sweetest people you'll ever meet. Not much has been said about part of Dwight Eisenhower's personality. When he grew up, he had a horrible temper. And one day his mom and dad wouldn't let him do something he wanted to do with his older brother. Now, his temper was so bad, he went into self-destruction. He went outside and took his hands and just beat the branches of an apple tree. Just tore his hands off. Mom and daddy found out what he did. Now, his daddy undoubtedly was kin to mine, because he brought him in and he whipped him so he'd get his mind off the pain on his hands. And his rear derriere was hurting worse than his hands. Well, he stayed in his room crying that day, and his mother came in, and she looked at his hands, and so she began to dress the wounds on his hands. And then she recited Proverbs 16:32. He that is slow to anger is better than the mighty. Undoubtedly, that sunk into his head and into his heart, because he was the commander of a powerful army in World War II. Then he became the 34th president of the United States. Ladies and gentlemen, Satan is going to knock on the door of your heart and your mind with anger that is sinful. Answer the door and let the devil know that he is not welcome in your life. Because if you allow anger to take control, you're going to become bitter, your worship is unacceptable, and your service to the King of Kings and Lord of Lords will be ineffective. And in plain Silver Creek ease, it just ain't worth it. Went over to the elementary school this week to mentor my little fourth grader. I walked in, he had four boys around the table, and he was mad. And he only weighs 60 pounds, and he's about this tall. He's fixing to jump on a boy. I walked in, I said, "Colt." He turned around. He went me right out into the hallway and sat down, threw his lunch down. I said, "Boy, what you doing?" He said, "I was fixing to lay him out, Mr. Phil." I said, "What you going to lay him out for?" He said, "That new kid, he's got his eyes on my girlfriend." I said, "Boy, you need to control that anger. You'd be a lot more powerful if you do." He said, "I said, they're going to throw you out of school." He said, "I don't care if they throw me out and never let me come back to school. I'd be happy." I said, "You want to make $20 an hour, $10 an hour, $50 an hour?" He said, "I'd rather make $50. I said, "You better finish school. That old girl's not going to have you." He said, "Well, I got another problem." Well, he's mad. He said, "There's four boys after my girlfriend. These are fourth graders." I said, "Really?" I said, "Well, how is she responding to that?" I said, "She won't look at any of them but me." I said, "Well, son, she knows who the big dog is." He grinned. And I said, "Listen to me, Cole. You just calm down. About that time, a teacher went to that new kid. He's already been written up. That kid may have gotten expelled Thursday." And I said, "Listen to me carefully, Cole. You don't ever want a woman that nobody else wants." So control your anger, baby, and keep making hundreds on your test. Isn't it a lot more fun to be happy with people, joke with people, and try to look at people through the eyes of Christ and live at peace with everybody around you? Will you stand right where you are, heads are bowed, eyes are closed?